so that the aim of a citizen is to have the most amount of time available to take part in politics. If you have the time to be on a jury and the time to serve in the assembly, this demonstrates that you exist in a condition of autarky, of autonomy, of self-rule, and that you can act then as a citizen. Now, this time for activity at the democratic level has to mean time that is freed from work. And the Greek term for this, having time available to be an active participant in the democracy, is skole. It's often translated as leisure time, but this gives the misleading impression that it means time when you can lie on the beach and read a good book. It does not mean that to the Greeks. Time away from work, but time where you participate as an active free citizen, this is skole. And the existence of that depends upon the existence of a world of slaves. Slaves make it possible for a slave-owning class, by living off that surplus, to have the time to act as citizens, to perform democracy, if you will. Now, we're going to explore that causal connection between slavery and democracy in a moment a little further, but I think that we have to address one other question first, and that is this. If a society has developed a strong sense of autarky, of self-rule and of individual freedom, as does democratic Athens, how can it reconcile that principle with the notion that it is quite proper to enslave another group of men? In other words, how can you glorify the potential of free men without recognizing that all men are potentially free? Now, this is a question I was thinking about recently after reading Frederick Douglass's autobiography of a slave. There is an incident in there where Douglass describes seeing a slave owner feeding some of the slave children on his plantation. And he takes a bucket of slops and throws it on the ground. And the children, who are dressed at best in rags, and some of them are naked, dirty and filthy, grovel round on the ground like pigs, eating the food, the slops that have been thrown out for them. That incident was revealing. It showed a mechanism whereby a slave-owning group could reconcile the idea of freedom with owning slaves. And the mechanism was quite simply that of bestializing the slaves, treating them as something less than human. And of course, in the American experience, that was also made possible by the fact that slave owners were white and slaves were not. They were African. So the racial distinction that was absolutely marked in American slavery made it possible for one group to conceive itself as racially superior to the enslaved class. But what about in the Greek experience? We know that men whose cities were captured in time of war could be enslaved. We know of people who are serving as slaves in Greek cities who are themselves then Greek. Nor is there any marked racial distinction between the various Greeks and people in the surrounding areas from which slaves came. So how do the Greeks then reconcile owning slaves when the slave population that they have is made up completely of people like themselves? Now, this is something that they were well aware of. There is a pamphlet written in the late 5th century, a conservative pamphlet written by a character who hates the democracy. And one of his complaints about the Athenian democracy is that when you walk around Athens, you can't tell who's a free citizen and who's a slave. They all look the same. They all dress much the same way. And, of course, racially, they're completely indistinguishable. So how, then, in a racially homogenous population, do you justify one group being slave owners and the others being slaves? Well, the answer to this, I think, is to be found in a passage in Aristotle, a much-discussed passage in the Politics. And I'd like to recount Aristotle's treatment of this question, because though it is a uniquely clear treatment of slavery, I think it also represents what must have been the general feeling of most Greeks of the time.